Yeah, this is my life. I'm done trying to convince people I'm real. Sleep,
never retreat. Welcome to the Road to the Trials podcast, where we take an insider's look into the training and racing of some of America's best runners as they prepare for the Olympic track trials in June. And in today's episode, we get to speak with Dana Giordano. Dana is a runner for the BAA and Adidas, who has specialized in, not really even specialized in, she's run a number of races from the 1500 meters all the way up to the 5K and has done exceptionally well at so many of those distances. And I was excited to talk to her today, not only to get, you know, some insider's look into her training and her recent racing, but also just, you know, where the Olympics have kind of played a part in her running up to this point, because she was someone who has gotten so close to the trials in the past and now has kind of come up on this new training cycle, and where is she going to fit in this year. So I was just really excited to talk to her, not only for those reasons, but she's one of the few people and barely the only person in this podcast that actually raced before we had a chance to do her intro episode. Now, that was part of the reason why we did her intro episode kind of after her first race, because it was going to be hard just to fit it in before she ran the New Balance Grand Prix down in New York last week. And, you know, that's kind of how we kind of arranged things here on the back end. And I was excited to talk to her about that race, because she had a situation that so many of us have had, and that was a race that didn't come close to meeting her standards. And she talks about exactly why that happened. It's perfectly understandable and reasonable, but at the same time, even when we have races that don't go well for the most obvious of reasons, it can still be, it's a drain on us, and it can be a little emotional, and it's, you know, all of those things kind of percolate within us if things don't go well, especially a race when we're racing against some of not only our peers, but some of the nation's best runners. And that's exactly who was at the New Balance Grand Prix last weekend. So I was so excited to talk to Dana, not only for all the running stuff that I already mentioned, but Dana is a podcast host herself. So if you love running podcasts, and if you're listening to this, you probably do, go check out the More Than Running podcast with Dana. That's part of the Sidious Mag podcast network. They do such good work over there. My goodness, such good work. So without further ado, let's get into it with Dana Giordano. Dana, welcome to the Road to the Trials podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here for season two.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our first conversation was almost exactly a year ago, when we thought season two would be right around the corner. And back then you're like, yeah, I'm definitely in. I remember contacting you now, like a month ago, being like, hey, this took a lot longer than we anticipated, but we're here. Are you still in? I couldn't be more excited that you are and that you were. And here we are getting started for what is now in earnest, the ramp up to the Olympic trials in June. Again, thank you so much for coming on. As I'm doing with everyone in these kind of intro type episodes, the first episodes for each guest, we'll definitely dive into your running history and where you are right now and have been in the recent past. But I do want to have basically open up the questions with something that I'm asking everybody. And that is, when did making the Olympic Games just start as a dream for you?
I think my Olympic dream is a little bit different than a lot of people. My first experience with the Olympics kind of goes back to watching it with my dad. He was a big, huge sports fan, and we were big Winter Olympics fans. My dad played ice hockey. He attended the Olympics in Lake Placid in the 1980s, and we would watch the Olympics every year, get so excited for it. Every 4 years, but it was mainly Winter Olympics focused until around 2008, where I had a major surgery and I was recovering from the surgery. And I essentially watched 2 weeks straight of the Beijing Olympics. I probably saw everything, including the random sports that don't get a lot of coverage. And that's where I just became enthralled by what it was. I was in eighth grade at the time, and I just loved it. I love seeing the athletes compete. I love seeing them represent their country. But I mainly loved watching Mary Carrillo, who was the woman who, she was a professional tennis player and then an NBC correspondent, and she did the human interest pieces. And I just loved seeing athletes in their hometown and the behind the scenes stories But it definitely wasn't until high school that when I discovered that my running ability was enough to go to college to run. And then my senior year of college, I ended up being the first person who didn't qualify for the Olympic trials in the 1500. So that was kind of the closest I had been to truly realizing that, okay, this is a dream that you can have. So yeah, just really didn't happen until my senior year of college.
All right. So that's when it kind of it shifted from dream to goal.
Yeah. And so when I graduated from Dartmouth in 2016, I ended up PRing a lot in the 1500, ended up being the first person who didn't make the trials. And I had already accepted a job at the time. So I just was thinking like, oh my God, that would have been so cool. Like watching as the days got closer to the trials, but it's always a dream to represent your country. I think no matter who you are, like that's just a unique and remarkable experience, but it didn't become tangible for me until my peers who I ran with in college were starting to run post-collegiately. And then I saw them and I was like, wait, I really want to do that.
Were there any athletes in particular, when you say that anecdote, like you're looking at your peers, anyone you want to name by name that you would like, either you thought of as the peers because they were friends of yours or maybe, you know, people that you ran against in HEPS or anything along those lines?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I was third at NCAAs in 2016 and Shannon Osiko was fourth. And she ended up doing, I think, one more race in Canada and qualified for the trials with her last race. And I didn't really even know what the trials was at that point. But she ended up getting a contract with Saucony. She now runs for Nike. But I remember being like, whoa. I didn't even know that was an option. I had a college teammate who went pro and a couple of other people, but they were, you know, these multiple-time NCAA champions and super high-level athletes. I just didn't know it was an option for someone very similar to me, and Shannon represented that. And then she ended up having, like, I think the second year I was working, like, a really good year, and I was like, wait, we're not that different, and I was just where you were 2 years ago. And now we've taken such different decisions and such different paths that I really was like, I'm so jealous of her. And I just wanted to be doing what she was doing. So shout out to Shannon. She's great.
This is so amazing to me because it really shows the difference in certain college sports, even at the highest level of college sports between other sports, right? You would never hear a men's or women's like college basketball player or a football player or a baseball player be like, I was one of the best in the country. And like, I didn't even know I could go pro. It's such a uniquely college track type story. When you look back on it now, why do you think you were unaware of the, some of the potential choices or potential like options that you had moving forward now that you know, with hindsight being 2020?
I think one of the biggest reasons, and I've talked about this with my college coach, who we have a really great relationship when we're close to this day, Coach Jaworski at Dartmouth. He actually ran professionally for a few years and we were kind of talking about, you know, options and things like that later down the road when I did decide to leave my job and pursue this. And he was like, you know, a lot of college coaches have relationships in the professional world and I just don't have those. And, you know, it's kind of like for these bigger schools and larger conferences, there's expectation of, okay, if you're doing well in the Big Ten or Pac-12 or something, you know, like that's what you want to do. But when you're in a smaller conference, like I was in the Ivy League conference, there's not a lot of people who do go pro. So I think that, you know, that kind of relationship building wasn't there so much. And my college teammate was Abby D'Agostino and she, you know, she won 7 national titles and it was an 11-time All-American. And I just kind of figured that's the level you had to be at to go pro. I didn't realize that there was a whole subsect of people who kind of just bet on themselves and were believing in it. And, you know, decided to keep training even without a contract after graduation. So I think I didn't really fully understand the landscape because I was so present in my college experience. And I really wasn't, I really had no idea what was going on in the post-collegiate world, quite honestly.
But, and this is going to be something that happens to a lot of college runners in terms of like, there's that set of college runners who, no matter how either talented they are or how prestigious their college career might have been, there's that group of people who are like, I just don't want to do this anymore. I'm burnt out. Maybe it's not a late long-term decision, but short-term, like, I need to step away. This was a grueling 4 or 5 years. Did you feel like you were in that camp at all? Or do you think if you could go back in time, you'd be like, hey, let's keep this train going. Like, I want to stay in this and let's keep, make it happen.
Yeah. So in my conference, there's no option to have a fifth year. And I think I probably really would have benefited from an extra year of eligibility. You know, I really, wasn't really a very mature runner coming in, just as far as like training load and things like that. So I think a fifth year would have kind of shown my true ability, because I was running so well at the end of my senior year. But yeah, I don't have any regrets when it comes to my decision of deciding to take a job and move on with my career and things like that. I think it was important for me to like rediscover the love of running, because it was something that I did for 8 years, high school and college. And I think that, you know, taking that pause moment really helped me center my goals of what I wanted to do. And that was compete at the Olympic trials. And I think if I didn't have that time to, you know, grow up and get my own apartment for the first time and work and commute to work and do all that stuff and balance everything, I think I would have missed out on it. And I'm really glad that I had that experience, because I do think I've changed a lot in the past 5 years since graduation.
That's a really good point. Now, this is an aside. I know you grew up in New Jersey, as did one of the other women that we're following in season two, Olivia Baker. Did you ever happen to run with Olivia, or was the age gap a little bit too big for you to remember doing that?
No, I don't know what year Olivia is. We definitely did run against each other. She was also very, very good at a super young age. So I feel like sometimes when people are good at a young age, you're like, oh, they've been around forever, because, you know, they had that whole time. But she ran at Columbia High School, and they were always really good at the relays, and we would go to Penn relays and they would smoke us. But yeah, I definitely knew of Olivia. She probably didn't know of me until later on, maybe. And yeah, no, I think it's New Jersey is such a great state to develop your running ability, just because you don't have to travel very far to get good competition. And I think that's how I developed, you know, I had people to race at every level in my own state, didn't have to travel very far. It was all within the public school system. And I think that's the best way to develop as an athlete.
Absolutely. Now, you've been on a number of podcasts. You have a podcast. You are a podcast host as well. And you've been on a lot of podcasts talking about your history as a runner. So I don't want to belabor the point in a way. If someone really wants to take a deep dive into Dana Giordano, she searched your podcast player. You're going to find a lot of options. You know, you've been on a number of shows, so we don't have to get into like every nook and cranny of the last, you know, 5 to 8 years with you as a runner. I do want to set the stage. So just in terms of where the Olympics kind of fell in terms of what you were thinking about, looking back at 2016, being basically one spot away from the Olympic trials qualifying system, did that serve as a motivator for you moving forward?
Oh, 100%. I think it was, you don't know how much you missed it and you didn't know you wanted it until you're that close. Like when you can taste it, you're like, man, I should have done one more race. I should have tried a little bit harder. It's kind of one of those telling things where when you can see the finish line, but you just don't make it. And I think that that's a very, very massive motivator for me. And I think that, you know, whether or not I make my dreams come true and make the Olympic team or not, for me, it's all about, you know, getting to that point. And it's kind of a collective of the Olympic trials are such a unique experience in the US. It's all your friends and family that you've interacted with. You've built this community over the past however many years you've been running, all in one place at the same time. And I think it's really, in my mind, it's a magical experience. So I think it's for sure going to be different this year than what I've created in my mind, just based on this past year. But even just going to a meet this past December, it's just so special being around this community of runners. So I just, yeah, I think it's the trials to me represents so much.
Hey, folks. The Road to the Trials podcast is presented by Koros Wearables, makers of performance GPS watches that help athletes train to their best. Athletes like world record marathoner Eliud Kipchoge and multi-time U.S. champion Emma Coburn trust Koros watches to track their training from long runs to track workouts. With their innovative track mode, which I love their track mode. This is one of the reasons I love these watches. You can measure your next track workout to near perfection, whether you've got 400 meter repeats in lane one or a 4 mile tempo in lane five. You can trust Koros watches to provide the stats that you crave. So show your support for the brands that support this podcast and pick up the Pace 2, the lightest GPS watch on the market. Enter code TRIALS at checkout on Koros.com. That's Koros.com for free accessory with your purchase. You can just pick whichever one you like after you enter the code. So when you use the Koros product, you know you're getting a premium watch designed, tested, and perfected by the athlete and for the athlete. Give Koros a follow on Instagram or on Facebook at Koros Global. Koros, explore perfection. If you look back in time to 2020, right after it started to become clear that the trials weren't going to happen and that things were going to get pushed back a year, and all of a sudden the live race scene, in-person race scene, was just completely in flux. What was that like for you physically and just mentally and emotionally in terms of trying to catch your bearings and figure out what 2020 was going to have in store for you and your training and your profession?
That's a huge question, Matt. There's so much to it. I guess I'll rewind this time last year. I was just talking to my roommate's another professional runner for New Balance, Heather McLean. And we were cracking up because we both ran the last chance meet at BU. I think it was on February 28th. I remember correctly, because the next day was the Olympic marathon trials, which was the 29th. And on the 29th, Heather and I flew to my grandparents' house in Florida. And I remember I called my dad being like, hey, there's this thing. Like, should I buy some, like, I don't know, wipes for the plane or something? I don't know. And then on the way home, I had this like Clorox wipe set, and I was wiping off my table around me and handing them out to people around, because we just all started hearing about it. But the airport was packed. We were coming back from Florida, and some guy sat next to Heather, who was in a different seat in the plane, and goes, yeah, some girl at the front of the plane is handing out wipes. And she goes, yep, that's my roommate. So thinking about that to now is like, whoa, we were so naive. We had no idea what was going on. But yeah, March was wild. We kept training pretty hard. You know, until that notice that the Olympics had been postponed and the trials had been postponed, the Olympics was first, the trials was second, which is kind of a weird way that they announced it. But until that notice happened, we just, you know, you had to go as if it was going to happen. Until you got that, you know, stop, you had to keep going. And then being in Massachusetts, I live in Boston, I trained at the Boston Athletic Association up here. Things got really serious and things got shut down. And it was so weird because other parts of the country weren't as shut down. So then it became a resource issue of, hey, those people in that part of the country are able to do everything, but we're not. So that was really hard to see at that time. But training didn't get super hard for me personally until April. And that was kind of butting up until the announcement. And it was just the uncertainty and stress was very, very challenging. Of just, you know, what is it going to be? Where are we going to go? These workouts are getting hard. We're not allowed to meet as a team. My parents actually live in Cape Cod, so I ended up going down there just to be with them and my family. And there's not great running. I love it there. We're near the start of the Falmouth Road Race. It's awesome. It's beautiful, but it's really not the best for training.
Unless you're training for hills. I've done the Cape Cod Marathon. And the first 13.1, because basically it's like going counterclockwise around the town of Falmouth. And the first 13.1 miles, nice and flat. Boy, was that nice. The second half, man, there wasn't like three steps in a row that was flat until you basically got to the last 200 meters.
Yeah. Does that go into Woods Hole?
It gets right to the edge of Woods Hole and then goes east.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where I was training for a while. And then I was there like a little back and forth between Boston. And, you know, it's just kind of, is it okay to train with my teammates? Is it okay to do this? Okay to that? Who's in my bubble? All these horrible questions you never thought you'd have to ask. But as soon as the trials were announced that they were postponed, we took some downtime and kind of, you know, got to reset. And it was pretty nice, just train and work hard. And I think we did, my teammate Erica and I did 5 weeks of every single Friday was hills up Heartbreak Hill. And, you know, it's just like super strong base training. So yeah, it was nice to reset and do some healthy training with, you know, it was uncertain, but it wasn't as stressful after the trials were moved because then everyone was in the same boat.
Yeah, it seems like you have a great training group up there. Obviously, Boston is like a really good running town in a lot of ways. Certainly, it's not Boulder or Flagstaff when it comes to elevation, but just historically, Boston's been really good at the running scene. You know, between Erica Kemp and Elena Tab, it seems like you have like that core group with you as training partners. What was it like for you just figuring out, you know, which races could pop up or won't pop up, or how connected were you to the potentials to race, you know, in various parts of the country and kind of figuring out what to do in those situations?
So my decision process when it came to it was I was honestly getting a little stir crazy, you know. As a professional runner, you're very used to moving around, especially domestically. You can have a race in California 1 week and then Oregon and be all over. So it's kind of odd for us to be in the same place. And I also had traveled a lot in my previous job at Reebok. So I have just been very used to being on the road. And obviously at NCAA, you're traveling all the time. So this is probably the most time that I'd spent at home in a while. And I ended up doing a friends training camp, not with my team, but with my friends Sam Murphy and Nikki Hiltz. And we were out in Park City out there, and Emma Gee was there, and we just had this fun, you know, we got to be at altitude and kind of just got away for a little bit. And that was super weird to travel during the pandemic, and definitely the time was very uneasy about it. But for me, my mental health and kind of just staying focused, it was so rejuvenating and refreshing just to kind of have a change of scenery. Utah was much less strict than Boston because their caseload was very, very low when I got there. So it's just nice to be able to run free and outside. And then when I was in Utah, I just got really fit. And someone locally here, John Green, put together a race called the Movement Series. And it was this race. And I was like, you know what? I kind of want to see where this fitness is at. So I ended up figuring out for the first time how to get a COVID test. It went up to my brain, and it was, you know, my first of many tests. But at the time, I just remember it so clearly because it was my first one ever, and I had no idea what I was doing. It's funny to rethink about all of this. But I ended up coming back and running a 1500. But because of USATF has just been very strict and stringent in their rules, so you had to get 2 negative tests within 7 days of the race. So there was actually very few other competitors that actually competed. So one of my fellow BAA club members, Brenna Datra, she ended up pacing me, which was awesome. And I ran a good 1500 PR, and not a PR, just a good 1500 meter run. I think I ran like 4:10. And then the New Balance Boston girls later in the summer put together some more time trial-esque at a local high school, but it was nothing legit or serious, but I just wanted to see where the fitness was at. And I know some other teams across the country were going a little bit harder and kind of setting up more stuff, but we kind of just managed with what we had. And I ended up running like 4:07 in the 15, which I thought was a great result for me and seeing where I was at. And that was a PR. So creeping closer to that Olympic trial standards. So yeah, it was a great stepping stone in the summer, and then kind of winded things down in August. And then come September 1st is when we really started hitting it hard as Team BA.
Yeah. When you guys did that, like, location unknown high school track meet in Massachusetts, I had this like extreme, like, I want to be a part of this. I live in Rhode Island. I'm like, I probably live really close to where this is happening. I know, but like, you guys, like, you know, kept it quiet, and you know, the organizers for good reason, right? They didn't want fans there. They didn't want to be a big production. Just as someone who was local, who had like an extreme interest in this stuff and who was going equally stir crazy, I was like, oh, where is this sucker? Should I just drive around to high schools trying to find this race? Like, this looks awesome.
Yeah. And that's the hard part, is you know, every state has these different restrictions. I think one time Rhode Island was on the red list, but there's people who live in Massachusetts who work in Rhode Island and vice versa. So
yeah, it was for a very short period of time. I remember because my sister-in-law lives in Western Mass and my in-laws live across the street from us. So like they're coming, like her coming down to see her parents was this odd thing of like, wait, what colors are we now? Like, what do I have to do? What does my kid have to do from like a, you know, a quarantine perspective? Like we've been juggling that like the whole year. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think that around here, it's like, we're trying to be as cautious as possible. I think the Boston Athletic Association has such a reputation of kind of being the, you know, we want to be the stewards of Boston running. We want to do things correctly. We want to stick by the book and we want to be safe. So we're wearing masks on our runs and we're trying to be respectful to the community. So it's a really odd balance because, you know, we're all experiencing this. And should I, as a professional runner, be held to a different group than another person who's just running? It's very complicated. And I think that's what we've been managing. But at the end of the day, you know, this is our job and this is what we've committed to doing. And there's just, you know, expectations, there's lost income, there's, you know, the things that everyone else has been struggling with as well. So every decision is just gets more complicated, as you know.
But it seems like despite all of these factors that from a fitness perspective and training perspective that you were able to continue to improve in 2020, just like you know, 5 years earlier, you'd hope to continue to improve post-college. It seems like on some level, even though it was certainly not the path that you anticipated in 2020, it seemed like you were still able to continue to improve despite all of the hurdles.
Yeah, definitely. I think we just had a wonderful fall out here. I mean, fall in the Northeast, you can't beat it. And weather-wise, we just had honestly a spectacular fall, best I can remember in a long time. You know, the weather was great, leaves were perfect. We were doing really great workouts. We were clicking, firing on all cylinders. So, yeah, I like to say that COVID's had all these different shifts, and summer/fall. Wasn't that bad. And winter has been much worse. So winter for me, this winter falls way more into like March, April of last year. But there was a little bit more like freedom and flexibility because you can be outside. It was really nice. And I agree, you know, training was going super well. We were just getting fit and we were going to be prepared when it was time to go. And we had a chance to show that in December in California.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about you know, the winter months, not only from a, you know, track meet perspective and being able to run at a higher level, but also just logistically as someone who's a middle distance runner, you know, your ability to get on a track and whether that's inside or outside or how you were able to do that. You know, obviously if I'm talking to Kira D'Amato, or Tyler Day or Frank Lara, who are all training for the 10K, like track availability, while a pain in the butt, isn't central to their winter. For you, it certainly can be.
Yeah, so we were super fortunate that we left and we went to Tallahassee for a month in January. Turns out January was the more milder month of the winter. And February has been very, very snowy. So it's definitely been a hard situation of what we're in, where we have no indoor track access and a lot of snow. So we just get creative. We've gone around the tempo loop a lot. Unfortunately, I've gotten a little injury in the time being. So, yeah, it was just weird things like that. Like I didn't know that a bank track would irritate my foot as much as it did during my past race because I haven't been on a bank track in over a year. So it's just all new issues that we're currently dealing with. And I think that you just kind of have to take the punches as they come because there will be more.
Right. So let's talk about this past race. So you had the New Balance Grand Prix, which this year was held down in New York and traditionally it's held in Boston, correct?
Yeah, so the Reggie Lewis Center is currently a vaccination center.
Right. Okay. So tell us about how the injury happened and exactly what happened.
Yeah, so training was going super well for me. When we were down in Florida, I kind of just tweaked my foot in a workout. It's kind of the second week of January. I kind of just tweaked it on the track. I stepped in a pothole that, you know, sometimes there's like little divots on the track. And I didn't think much of it. My foot got super tight and I ended up releasing it the next day. And it just was like felt like plantar fasciitis sort of pain. But again, we are pretty strength based program, you know, strength is speed. So everything was feeling good, you know, in the tempos and stuff like that. But the track workouts were getting pretty hard, just on my foot. But you know, we're tough as runners. You kind of just try to manage through it. So I really didn't know how bad it was, quite honestly, because I hadn't been in spikes, in months. And so we haven't really done a lot in spikes. We've just been doing everything in flats, and flats, I guess, don't irritate my foot as much. So I apparently strained my arch, muscles, on my foot, which isn't great. But the day of the race, normally there was a pre-meet the day before. My COVID test hadn't come back in time, so I was unable to attend the pre-meet and, test out how that banked track would feel. And I guess my foot just couldn't handle the angle. So in hindsight, get the COVID test earlier. Hopefully it comes back. But yeah, I'm just managing with that right now, seeing some really good people here in Boston, trying to get strong. I had to pull out of a race next week, which is in Austin, Texas. So I'm not going to be doing that until my foot is 100%.
All right. So that's Trials of Miles.
Yeah. So I was supposed to be doing the 1500 there. And it's always really frustrating when you're super fit and you're ready to go, but something just bugs up. So I'm trying to stay optimistic, and I rescheduled this call for the listeners to a different day because it was right after the weekend. And I was like, I need some time to reset. But since then, I've been in some really good hands. I've kind of diagnosed what's happening, and now I'm just, you know, have an action plan to get back at it.
All right. So let's talk about that, because every person who's listened to this podcast has in some way, shape, or form gone through a race that did not meet expectations. And I'm thinking about those races that we run, and your hostess had a lot of these suckers, where you come in with certain expectations after especially good training block. And that makes it even worse when those races don't quite meet your expectations, or if they fall far from that expectation. And just the mental rebound that can come from that, you know, it sounds trite because, hey, it's just running. But at the same time, it isn't, when you're putting a lot of your mental and emotional, you know, focus into something. So, you know, when you, you know, again, you wanted to reschedule the call, and I appreciated that honesty, because I knew that you were, you know, being introspective and you were trying to figure out exactly what you thought about the whole situation. So talk to me about just the mental and emotional processing from a race or an experience like that. Like, we know, like, physically, you know, you're going to have to take certain steps, but what are the steps to take mentally and emotionally from that experience?
Great question. Yeah, I think it's, you know, we're all human. We're allowed to be mad. We're allowed to be upset, especially when things don't go our way. So I think the first thing is, you know, accepting those emotions. You know, if you're having a bad time, just, that's okay. You know, it's, you don't have to be happy-go-lucky. You don't have to suppress what you're going on. And if you want to watch The Bachelor with roommates and have a glass of wine versus talking in a podcast about a race that didn't go well, you know, maybe that's the move. I think prioritizing what's going to bring you some joy. I do like to go with the 24-hour rule of, you know, if you have 24 hours to be upset about it, but then after that, you have to look forward. You have to figure out what's going on. So it was more than 24 hours. I gave myself 48 this time. But what I try to do is align myself with people who have the same goals as me. So I know a lot of time people get really frustrated when they have injuries or bad races, but, you know, if the people in your corner understand what you're going through. So like on the injury side, if your PT knows that you really wanted to do X thing and you didn't accomplish it, you're a team together and you can get there. But if they don't know what you're trying to do, it's really hard to get to that place. So I think kind of having your little team of, you know, we're all trying to do this together and I'm here for you and I'm supporting you helps me a lot. And the other thing that helps me a lot is knowing no one cares as much as you that you had a bad day. You know, to me, it's definitely like an ego bruise. Like, I thought I could have been, you know, top three in that race and I ran so slow, but it's like, no one's going to care in my life. I don't, my opinion of other people, the other people's opinion of me, excuse me, isn't altered because I had a bad race. My value as a human isn't altered because I had a bad race. And I think sometimes that stuff is very hard to see immediately after the race. So taking that time post to be like, okay, it happened. Now we move on.
So when you think back to what bothered you most about the experience? Was it just the physical component of like, oh, my foot, like what a pain in the butt, like, oh, now I'm gonna have to miss the next week? Or was it a feeling of like, oh, like now I'm looking at the calendar and I'm trying to figure out like when is this going to happen for me? Like, or were there just mental and emotional components to this that were more frustrating to you? Just like the fear of like the unknown of what's going to happen. Like, obviously we've all had injuries before, and most runners dealing with injuries right now as they're listening to this. And that can be a somewhat of a straightforward process from a roadmap perspective of like, okay, I'll do my rehab, then I'll do this, and then I'll be back to normal. Whereas where our expectations and our thoughts on how we're going to achieve a long-term goal, that can be a little bit more murky. Like, where do you think most of your dissatisfaction with the weekend lay?
Yeah, I think what was the most frustrating thing for me was kind of not understanding what was wrong. You know, I think once I realized, okay, it definitely is your arch. You strained this, you did that, that's tight. You know, I really like answers, and I'll follow any plan. I'm very committed to that. I just need to know what to do. So that part of it was frustrating. And then the other aspect was just, you know, I had such a great race in California. I ran a great 5K in December, and you know what it feels like to feel good. And when you don't feel that, you're like, man, I really wanted to feel that way where I felt good. So I think that's kind of, that's more a little more shifting mentality of it. It's just kind of we all have high expectations, and that's okay. And I think it's hard when your expectations are not met.
All right. So what has happened this week for you to create new expectations for the short term?
Yeah. So I think it's figuring out what you can and can't do. So what you can control versus what you can't control. So I can control how much I'm sleeping, when I'm eating, what PTs I'm seeing, how to diagnose myself, like not how to diagnose myself, excuse me, more of just like seeing the right people. So I can control all those things. Things I can't control are the race that already happened. So this week has just been kind of managing of, all right, writing down what I can control and then checking off the list of, all right, do all these things that you know have worked for you in the past, and having those help you. And then some of my things too are like, you know, reach out to old friends that don't even know what you're doing right now. And so sometimes just talking to someone outside my circle is helpful too.
Absolutely. All right. So, you know, you had this great race in California and you've had some really good training before then. When we first spoke last year around this time, you were, you know, laser focused, it seemed at least, laser focused on the 1500. Has that changed at all in your thinking?
So the way the Olympic trial schedule works is the 1500 is first and the 5K is second. So in my ideal world, I'll do both. Currently, I'm not qualified in the 1500. So I guess whatever happens in the next few months with racing, will kind of change that plan. But at some point I will have to choose and specialize, which event, but hopefully I'll be able to sooner than later knock out a 1500 qualifier. So then I can decide, which way I'm leaning.
Now, if both choices are relatively equal in terms of your setting, you know, basically your standing, I should say, compared to your peers and things along those lines, do you have a personal preference?
I would like to run the 15 first and focus on that, and then have the 5K as an option. I know that, I mean, the U.S. American distance running right now is absolutely loaded. Neither race is a walk in the park. Even making the 1500 final would be a massive goal of me, for me. And that's what I think about when I think about the Olympic trials, is making that 1500 meter final.
Got it. Oh, that's exciting. I certainly wish you the best in terms of, you know, going exactly down that path. I had a similar conversation with Olivia Baker last week, because she has, you know, for her, it's like it's the 4 and the 8. And those two aren't really compatible at the Olympic trials. Obviously, the final schedule hasn't been released, but if history is a guide, that's not going to really work out for her, with the caveat being that she also has potential for being in a relay, specifically the 4x4. And, you know, for her, she was like, yeah, I wish I was an 8 and 1500 meter runner, because I could make that work. I just can't make the 4 and the 8 work. So I'm going to have to choose. And it just becomes such a unique situation for runners like y'all, because you have a situation where you can't necessarily pursue exactly what you are potentially prepared to do. So with that said, with the 5K, was it the 5:18:06? I'm sorry, 5:18:06. World record alert, 15:18:06?
Yes.
Okay, good. So when you would head out there, when you headed out there for that race, was that where you thought you were fitness-wise, or was that time a surprise to you? Because I know a few years earlier, you were closer to like the 16-minute mark.
Yeah, I think it's always really funny when something is super deceptive based on your times. I mean, I've run 5Ks on the road in the 15:40s too. So I just think it's kind of funny that, I mean, my PR was from my sophomore year of high school. College. Sophomore
okay. College. I was like, wow, what a time gap. That's amazing.
But still, that's a long time, sophomore year of college. So I just didn't really focus on the 5K. I wasn't in any fast ones. I ran it. But yeah, I think that time was just really far off. And definitely the announcers at that 5K were like, whoa, that's crazy. But I'm like, okay, but I've run a good 3K. I ran like 8:51 in the 3K indoor. So I did think that was kind of discounted when people were looking at like this huge breakthrough. I'm like, kinda, I guess. But I think a lot of people sometimes don't know women's times as well. So
in that 3K was like top 10 in the country that year.
Yeah. I mean, the season was cut slightly short, but yeah, it was. So I think that it was kind of funny. People were like, oh my God, she's there. I'm like, well, no, I completely expected that. And that time was kind of exactly where we thought it would be as well.
Gotcha. Okay. So do you have certain times in mind for this spring? Not as aspirational, but in terms of like that you think if the training can continue to happen the way it has happened, to mid to late 2020, that you feel like are in your wheelhouse, but still a stretch goal?
I think both Olympic A standards are within my wheelhouse. I'm confident that for the 5K, it's 15, sub 15:10. So that's 8 seconds right there. I think that's not too far off. And then, it's like 4 seconds at 15. So that'll definitely be a little bit more challenging, but I just don't think they're that far away. And it just takes a good race and being strong. I'm much stronger than I ever have been before. So I think both are manageable. Just got to stay healthy and get there.
I'm excited. All right. So Trials of Miles down in Austin is not going to happen for you. Do you have a race after that on your schedule, or is it still TBD at this point?
It's TBD in the point that all races are TBD. There have been a lot of really amazing individuals who have put races on, blood, sweat, and tears, getting them lifted, and there hasn't been a lot from USATF putting on meets. So I'd like to see, hopefully there'll be some more meets that come up. I know that there's another circuit coming through, but the way that every state restriction is changing, we just have to be really flexible with what we're expecting for races. So hopefully that in a month or two, when, we're going to go to another altitude camp, that by the time we get to late April, May, there'll be a lot more racing.
All right. So where are you going for altitude camp, and when are you heading down there, or up there, I should say?
Also a question mark right now for on both accounts. I'll let you know when I know. My coach is, trying to figure out the best scenario. Coach Mark Carroll, he was a phenomenal, he's an Irish record holder, multiple time Olympian. So he's trying to find the best setup for us right now. Again, goalposts are just shifting.
I can tell. Well, this is obviously not what you had hoped for, but for us following you, it is exciting to see exactly what's going to happen. The craziness and spontaneity obviously isn't new to anybody. We've been living that life now for a year, and we're just so excited to follow along. So Dana, thank you so much for coming on. We'll reconnect next month to see how you're doing with your training and your foot, and what is in store for you from a training camp and race perspective. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Hopefully this will be a much different conversation in a month.
I'm knocking on wood for that. Here we go. Dana, thank you so much for coming on the show. I can't wait to talk to you again next month as the spring season starts to round into focus and we figure out where you're going to go for your altitude training and dive into exactly what that means from a training perspective. So many of us have heard about these altitude training camps. It will be fun to hear exactly what you're up to and what your coach is planning for that trip. Thank you so much for listening to this show. This is a big week here on the Road to the Trials podcast. Tomorrow and the next day, we got two more episodes. It's a three-episode week because we want to get a couple intro episodes out before the Trials of Miles race down in Austin this coming weekend. So you're going to hear Tyler Day and Frank Lara later this week. So Dana was coming out on Tuesday. The next day, Wednesday, we got Frank Lara. Thursday, Tyler Day. Trials of Miles this coming weekend. And then we'll do some recaps a few days later. Just so much stuff going on, to say nothing of the intro episodes that we have coming up with Olivia Baker and Abe Alvarado. Thank you so much for listening and happy running. This has been a production of the Rambling Runner Podcast Network. Thank you to my producer, David Margetti from In Post Media. Also, thank you to MetaP for the music and his song, Evolution. Cheap. Question is deep. I'm a real person. Real version.